Ksubis is going to be a new topic.
Oh, that would just happen.
Oh no, that was the discussion. That was the discussion about Nida, which hopefully, if I prepare well in the next how many weeks is until Elul, so that'll be the topic for Elul. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. So now let's look at the Mishnah here on Daf.
Taking a breath.
No, I see we're late. So if it's okay with you, I'm really pressured to get started because we have a whole new sugya to cover tonight. And let's begin with the Mishnah on Daf Yud Amud Beis. Okay.
By the way, I just came across it this week. So basically, because Reflections of the Rav, I think it's the second volume of Bezdin. He has analysis of the Shavah Brachos of the Yotzer, the two Yotzer Ha'adam. I don't know if you remember it often.
I thought we were mentioning it. But anyway, if you have it, bring it in. I have it somewhere. But so what is the Mishnah going to tell us? The Mishnah says that Besula Ksubasa Masayim Ve'almana Mana.
Where are we? I'm sorry.
We're on the Mishnah on Yud Amud Beis. In other words, at the time of the Nisuin, a husband writes a ksuba to his wife, and the Mishnah wants to know how much does he obligate himself to pay in event of a divorce or after his death, and the answer is it depends. If she's a Besula, she never had Be'ila, then he pays Masayim Zuz. And if you remember, this was a gigantic machlokas, whether it's Doraisa, whether it's Drabonon, if it's Doraisa,
right,
derived from Moar Habsulos, the case of Mafata and Ma'anis. Fine. Almana, I mean, here's a woman who's already been married before. Let's say her husband died, for example, is mana. She only gets a mana. Okay? Now, if she's a grusha, then the assumption is that she's already a bu'ula, because she was married once before, and she'd get only a mana. However, the Mishnah goes on to say, besula almana o grusha. What happens if you have a case of a woman who was married once before, and yet she's still a besula? Now, how can you find a case of that sort? So the normal case is what's called an almana min ha'erusin. You remember that marriage has two stages.
Yeah.
And if, let's say, she lost her husband before the nisuin, because they only consummate the marriage with be'ila at the nisuin, then she still has a cheskas besula. We lose it. So in such a case, she'll get Masai. The fact that she was married once before does not remove her rights to a ksubas besula, if we have reason to assume she's still a besula.
Right.
And the paradox is, how can you say on the one hand she was married once before, and on the other hand she's still a besula? The answer is an almana min ha'erusin. Now we have a case of a grusha min ha'erusin. Again, the same story, same scenario. Her husband, in this case, divorced her before they consummated the marriage at the nisuin, during the erusin. V'chalutza min ha'erusin. Imagine if a man is married to a woman, he dies before he's able to consummate the marriage. He didn't have nisuin yet. She falls for yibum to the brother, correct? And instead of yibum, he does chalitza, so he never consummated the mitzvah of yibum. Is she still a besula? And therefore, ksubasa masayim, she gets masayim zuz. Says the Mishnah, the eshlan tainus besula. But if he has relations with her, after he wrote this ksuba of masayim zuz, and he claims that he did not find her to be a besula, which again either means pesach pasuf matzasi or lo matzasi dam, I didn't find dam. In those cases, she loses her ksuba. We trust him, we believe him, with a tainas besula. The Gemara wants to know my almana. What's the meaning of the word almana? You know, the semantical or etymological interpretation of almana. Omar Avchanabag Desah, almana al shem mana. In other words, you add a shin mem, and it's al, which is for the sake of, and mana means she gets a mana. Now, the Gemara is going to point out that makes a lot of sense if ksuv is doraisa. Then the Torah would have added the word almana to indicate that she lost her ksubas psula because she was married once before. But the Gemara says the following: Almana min ha'erusin, Michael and Meimar. Look, she's still a basula, she gets Masayim Zuz, but yet she's an almana. So how can the Torah use the word almana to describe a woman because she only gets a mana and she was once married? She could have been married before, widowed, and she still gets a ksubas masayim of a besula. Aidi daha kari lelmana, nami kari lelmana. Since the Torah uses the word almana to refer to the classical almana, which is almana min ha-nesuin, then we use the same word, the same term, almana min ha-erusin, even though technically she's not an almana, because the real literal translation of almana means she only gets a mana. Here's a woman who's widowed, but she still gets masayim. The Gemara asks the question, almana d'ksiva doraisa ma'ikal ameimar. But I don't understand. The Torah itself uses the word almana. And if we assume, for the time being, that ksuva is the rabbanon, and with the raisa there's no such thing as ksuva, how can you say that the Torah calls an almana because she's going to get a ksuva of mana, when there is no ksuva in the Torah. And the Gemara answers, that see the rabbanon de mesachne le mana, that since the rabbanon are going to, down the line, establish a takana of ksuva, and in this case the almana gets a mana, right, 100 zuz, therefore the Torah uses the word almana because the Torah knows the future. And a name is given based on the future?
Yes.
So the Gemara is not happy with this. Umi kasav kro liyasid. Is it really true that the Torah would give a name based on the asid? The Gemara is going to find a steer to that. Okay, the only problem is that I lost my place here. Just 1 second. Here it is. The Gemara says, you're skeptical. Is it true that the Torah gives a name based on the future? Don't be so skeptical. Why? Dichsiv, because the Torah says in the creation story, back in Bereshis Beis, B'shem Anahar Shlishi Chidekel, who are loyal Kidnas Ashur. And the Gemara says, what do you mean Kidmas Ashur? Tana Rav Yosef, Ashur, Zu, Slika. In other words, somewhere in Assyria there's a city that's going to be called Ashur, and it's identified in Babylonian language as Slika. V'chimi Havi. Now, when was this city, which is called Slika, or otherwise known as Kidmas Ashur, when was it named? Way later, after creation, that was a human name that was given. Elo, we have no choice to say, Da Asida. That the Torah calls it Kidmas Asher based on the future, even though at that point the creation it wasn't called Kidmas Asher. Is Hachinami here too? In the case of Almana, the Asida, since the Chachamim were going to establish a Takana for an Almana that she collects only a Mana, she collects a Mana, I should say, therefore the Torah gives the name Almana. Now, from this point and on, until the next Mishnah, which is on Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, the Gemara goes through a study of various terms that appear in the Torah, and whether those names that were given by the Torah are al-shem ha'as. So what I would like to do now is learn the Mishnah Daf Yud Aleph. Okay then? Because I think that's much more relevant to us tonight. Okay then? So by way of introduction, what is the subject of this Mishnah on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph? The Mishnah says that you can have a case of a woman who, by virtue of her halachic status, only gets a mana, but yet she'll get masayim. And that's going to be the case of Gioris. Gioris is a prototype, it's one example of many examples of a woman who has the status of, we assume that she had relations in the past, and we don't have any way of clarifying that she did not have relations in the past, and therefore she cannot be assumed to be a besula, but rather we treat her as if we know for a fact that she's a be'ula, and therefore she only gets Mea, she only gets 100 zuz. So recently I was Masada Kedusha for Gioris, and the Ksuba reflects the fact that she is a Gioris, and she only gets mon.
Does it refer to her as a Bula in the Ksuba?
No, there's an Aramaic word, you know. Hashvuya. Shvuya is a Jewish woman who was taken captive by the Goyim, and there too we assume that they raped her, and therefore she has the status of a Bula. Vashivcha, now we're talking about Shivcha Knanis, she was born as a non-Jewess, and she was sold to a Yisrael as a Shivcha. And once again, since she was born as a non-Jewess, therefore she has a ksuba of a Ba'ula, which is only Me'azuz and not Masayimzuz. But the Mishnah wants to say that, you know what? Even in these cases where the halachic status of the woman is such that she's a Gioris, she's a Shivcha Knainis, or she's a Shvuya, nevertheless, there are ways and are scenarios and situations in which we can be absolutely sure that despite her status, she's still a Basur. And what is that called? We've discussed this in the past, you may remember. Pchusos mibnos sholosh shanim v'yomer. This woman became a Gioris at the ripe old age of 2.9. She was less than 3 years old. And in that case, even if in the worst case scenario we assume that she had some sort of Be'ila relationship, nevertheless, we have a principle called Bisulaseh Chozrin, and therefore Ksubasan Masayim shall get 200 Zuz, V'yeshlem Tainis Bisulin, and she has the status of a Bisul. Now, the discussion of this Mishnah, the theme of this Mishnah is Ksuba. Ksubas Masayim, Ksubas Mea, Ksubas Ba'ula, Ksubas Pasula. But there's something that comes out of this Mishnah that really has nothing to do with Ksuba. And that is the possibility of taking a girl who's less than 3 years old and converting her. And that's going to be the subject of our sugya. Amar Rav Huna ger katan matbilin oso al das bez. Now, let me give the following introduction. Gerus is made up of three parts. I'm talking about a male. For a female, it's only two parts. The three parts for a male are mila, tvila, and kabolas ol mitzvahs. In the case of a woman, we drop mila, obviously, and we're left with tvila plus kabolas ol mitzvahs.
How is that classically performed, kabolas ol mitzvahs?
So there's an entire sugya about this in Yevamos, and it's paskin in Hilchas Geirus Shulchanoch. Basically, we give them, the Bezdin gives them a taste of the kalos and the chamuros, and they accept everything. Again, they have to know all of Tariq Mitzvahs, but that's a process of education. But at the moment of the formal ceremony of Geirus, we give them a little bit of a sampling, so to speak, of the kalos and the chamuros.
And do they make a shavua?
No, they simply say, I accept it. And that Kabbalah, obviously, is done with intelligence. You know, if you're not intelligent, for example, a little baby is obviously not capable. You know, like tomorrow we're celebrating my granddaughter's first birthday. Okay, that's Yael Siva's first birthday. So my daughter said, don't tell her, it's a surprise. You know, like, what's the difference? You know, if I tell her, I don't tell her, you know. But be that as it may, l'chora, this whole concept of ger katan, which is implicit in the Mishnah, it's almost explicit in our Mishnah, is antithetical to everything we know about gerus. The precondition for gerus, the essence of gerus, is not just the formal mila and tvila, but the kabbalah sol mitzvahs, which requires das. Das is a halachic state of intelligence. A katan is a lav bar das. You could have the Vilna Gaon, maybe he knew Shas at the age of 6, by the way, that's such a rumor, I don't know if it's true, but they don't say it about me. And yet, he's still a katan. He doesn't have das. He could be absolutely precocious and he could be Einstein. It doesn't matter. Halakhically, he doesn't have das. So here you have a girl in our mission. She's less than 3 years old. She's a Gioris. Okay, she's still a Basula. Because in the worst case scenario, even if she had Bila Basula, Seth Chosman, and therefore she gets a Ksuvas Messiah. But the fact of the matter is she's a Gioris. The mission doesn't blink about that. How could she be a Gioris when she's 3 years old? Where's the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs? Omar Avhuna, Rav Huna says, Ger Katan, you have a child, and yet he can become a Ger. How so? Matbilin oso al das bezdin. Now, I told you a minute ago that Geris requires das. Yeah. Is Rav Huna perhaps implying a solution to that problem? Or call it a substitution for das?
Yes.
Yes, because what word here does Rav Huna use?
Is it
just, yes, just coincidental? Possibly it's deliberate. He uses the word das here to show you that there is das. Again, that doesn't reduce the revolutionary nature of Rav Huna's statement, but it's not that revolution, that it's not that Rav Huna's rejecting das as a requirement for Geirus. He's just saying that there's such a thing as das bezdin. Now, the first question I want to ask you here, before we understand what das bezdin is all about, is why should bezdin get involved in this? Are we going to run around the streets and just chop goyim, you know, little children, and be megayer them? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says the following. Im ein lo av, the child has no father. Okay, I don't know why that's crucial, but Rashi says there's no father. V'imo hevi aso lehizgayer. Interesting. His mother brought him for gayus. Does Rashi imply, by the way, and this is not my main topic, but on the side, does Rashi imply that the father has a special role here? Rashi's telling us the father's not around. Maybe he died, maybe he's unidentifiable, maybe he's out in China, we don't know where he is. Maybe he's watching soccer in Europe, I don't know. But isn't Rashi implying something very important about the father?
Sounds like the mother for sure isn't Jewish. Maybe the father is Jewish.
Okay, but let's get back to the concept of das. Rav Huna's breakthrough is that even if the Mizgayer doesn't have das, we can find a solution to that problem. Call it a substitution. What is that substitution? Where do we plug in das as Rav Huna?
Das based.
Rashi, I think, is implying that we might not necessarily need das based. Even if the katan doesn't have das, we can plug in das from a different source, not necessarily from bezdin. What's that?
The father.
The father. Where Rashi gets this from, I have no clue. But just in reading the Rashi, my impression is that Rashi holds the father of this child plays a special role. Maybe Aaron, like you say, he's also being misguided. I don't know.
Maybe he's Jewish himself.
Well, maybe he's Jewish. I would rather assume he's not Jewish. I'll tell you why. Not by birth. Because if he's Jewish by birth, then he has no relationship to this child whatsoever. Because a father has no yichus to a child that's born to a non-Jewish woman. Okay, I don't want to get off on a tangent. But nevertheless, Rashi's telling us we're not just running through the streets and grabbing, you know, Goyish children to be Megayer them. That's not our platform. That's not our agenda. But Imo Heviosel is Gayer. Does it mean that she's also coming to be Misgayer? Possibly. That would make sense. You know, it's a family kind of Gayers. You know, Avi Zik just came back from Gibraltar after spending, I don't know, a year or so teaching a family Gayers. And now the Gayers is complete. And the Geirus took place under the aegis of the Bezdin of Rav Aaron Troy of London. So it's a very reliable Geirus. I met the family when I visited Avi and his wife, Karen, in Gibraltar a few months ago. They were not Geirim yet, they were Goyim. And, you know, it's one thing to say that a family of mature adults wants to be Mizgayer and to be Mekabel Mitzvah. It's another thing to say that you have a katan here. And my bilanos al das bezdin. So Rashi says, you know what? It's not that bezdin just woke up one day and say, let's grab this child and be Megayer him. Rashi's saying that it's a family kind of gerus. Rashi has a problem here. If it's the entire family, let's say, in a classical sense, including the father, then we don't need Das Bezdin. Possibly. Again, I don't know. I can't take a shvud or I say that's what Rashi means. I'm just, shall I say, I'm just speculating about what Rashi might mean. That if the entire family, including the father, was there, we wouldn't need Das Bezdin. We always need Bezdin for Geirus. There's no Geirus without Bezdin. That's the first mission in Sanhedrin. But in this case of a Ger Katan, Rav Huna is saying we need Bezdin in a twofold function. First, in the general, universal function as the structure of Geirus, to structure and implement Geirus. Number two, in this case of a Katan, we need the Bezdin to supply the Das, the backup Das we have here. I know in computers there's always a backup, right? So here we have a backup concept. The backup is the Das Bezdin. So Rashi might be implying that we need this backup of Das Bezdin because there's no father. If the father is also in on the Geirus, he can supply the backup Das. I don't know.
I thought there was a principle with the non-Jewish child that we don't really know who his father is. So who's the father?
I don't know that that's so.
Okay.
Do you have a right for that?
No,
I don't know.
I
don't think that's so, as far as I know. Now, notice that what's going to happen with this child? What is Rav Huna mention? What does he single out?
Tevil.
So Rashi's bothered by that, because if it's a male, it's not enough tevil. You also need mila, correct? So if you take a look at Rashi, the second Rashi, he says, Matbilin, de'ein lecha ger b'lo milo tevil. You know, keep in mind you need mila. Again, if it's a gioris, then obviously it's just tevila. Al das bezdin, says Rashi, shlosha yiu b'tfiloso. First of all, we need the presence of three dayonim who sit on this bezdin. Kidin kol tfilas ger, shetzrichim gimel. Any ger needs gerus in the presence. If a person is miskayer bein olivein atzmo, that's not called gerus. But more than that, hein nasim lo av. What is Rashi implying if you put this Rashi together with the previous Rashi? If there would have been an av, who could supply the das? The father. Now we need a substitute father. What I call the backup das. That's going to be Bezdin. Because Bezdin is the av of this ger, at least as far as the Maisa Gerus is concerned. The hein nasim lo av. Varehu ger al yedehem. And now Rashi says something very strange. Umago biyayin kosher. The law is that if a guy comes in contact with wine, let's say an open bottle of wine, then the wine becomes stam yenom. Stam yenom is a gzera because we're always worried that maybe the guy use the wine for nesach, for libations, for avodah zarah. Now wait a minute. Rashi wants to tell us, "Meinaf gemina." You just told me that we can take this ger, we can take this child, make him into a ger. So Rashi says, "Meinaf gemina." What difference does it make? So Rashi says he can touch my wine. Is anything strange about this, Rashi?
To show that even though based in.
No, but I'm asking you something, Aaron. So imagine you're Rashi. Would you like to be Rashi? I mean, if he was still alive. So you're Rashi. And there's a guy in the class. And he raises his hand. So you call on him. You say, yes, how can I help you? So he says, my nafkamina, who cares whether he's a ger or not? What would you say as Rashi? What nafkamina would you
say?
Yeah, you can count him as a minion.
Well,
he can marry a Jewish girl.
It doesn't happen yet. In other words, that's down the road.
Maybe.
What the question is, what right now is the nafkamina?
Maybe Rashi's interested in knowing what's relevant now as a katan. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
But why shouldn't Rashi tell me something that's so much more far-reaching? You know, that he's a Jew. You know, he can testify in a court of law.
All that's down the road.
Tell me what's down the road. You know. So what I'd like to learn with you is Tosus, because I think that in light of this Tosus, maybe we could have a whole different understanding of this Rashi. Tosis doesn't quote Rashi, but I think Tosis is bothered by the next line in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Maiko Mashmalon. I don't need Rav Huna. That's pretty wild. I thought Rav Huna was pretty revolutionary. I never in my million years would have come up with this idea that we take a child and we Megayer him al Das Beis Din. But the Gemara asks the exact opposite question. Maiko Mashmalon. All Rav Huna is doing for me is applying a well-known universal principle in Halacha to this particular case. I don't need Rav Huna for that. What's the well-known, obvious, universal principle? Zoche li'olam shelo b'fanav. I can do something on your behalf to create what we call a chalos, some sort of halachic status. I do it for you, without your knowledge, without your das, as long as it's a zchus, as long as it's something great, it's something that you benefit from. What greater benefit could there be for a guy than becoming a Jew? So therefore, the most profound example of a zchus, that's the Gemara's arguing now, the Gemara's going to backtrack on this, is the case of a guy becoming a Jew. Therefore, zochin the olam shelo b'fanav, I don't need the das of the katan. Just like, for example, if Max wants to give you, Aaron, a great gift, I can come along and I could stand in your place. You're somewhere else, right? You're in, let's say, do we want to say Texas or Georgia? I don't know. And Max is here in Jerusalem and he gives me this gift on your behalf. Zachin li'olam shelo b'fanav. Great, right? So I can supply the das to receive this chalos, to generate this chalos on your behalf without your das. And that's exactly what's going on in the case of Ger Katan. And then the Gemara is going to go through an entire discussion about whether it's a zchus to be Jewish.
But can you also, in other words, here you're changing the status of the person. In other words, you're not just moving an object where you say zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. You're saying I can do it without you knowing about it. But here you're changing
his whole life. You say what?
You're changing the.
So what do they call it, a life?
So I'm saying that you can't do in this. In other words, there you need a mechanism. You need a way to do that.
And that's at this point, the Gemara is assuming that whether or not this Geirus is effective depends on one and only one question. Is becoming a Jew a zchus?
Right, but I'm coming from a different angle. In other words, what I'm saying...
I don't know, because you're like you say, you're coming from a different angle. The Gemara understands
that... I'm happy with Zachin La'adam Shelo B'fanav, that I can give an object to somebody else without him knowing about it because he wants that object, but can I change the status of a person, even if that's for
their
benefit?
So the Gemara understands that changing a status is a chalos. And if it's a zchus to create this chalos on your behalf, I can operate on your behalf without your das.
I'm saying the idea that
no matter how far-reaching
das is, that zachin la'adam is not—it's not sufficient in this case. In other words, you also
The Gemara. Maybe you think so, but the Gemara doesn't think so. The Gemara thinks that zachin la'adam is perfectly applicable because why? We're creating a chalos geirus. And a chalos geirus is like any chalos. Let's say, for example, it may be true, this is highly unlikely, that if, let's say, in divorce, in geirushin, if I can convince you that for this woman, it would be a great zchus to get this get, you know, this no good husband is, you know, recalcitrant, he's refusing to even get, I caught him somewhere, you know, in a bar, you know, in down in, I don't know where, in Rio de Janeiro, you know, and he's willing to give a get. So let me, you know, instead of calling up the woman and she's going to fly to Brazil, you know, it's like, I'm going to be mezakaha. That's fine if I can prove that it's a schus. You know, not every get is a schus for a woman, but let's say a get, you know, all I'm trying to suggest here, Rabbi Osai, just because I want to make a little progress, I don't want to get stuck on this point. The Gemara assumes that whether or not Beis Din can be Megayer a Katan through the principle of Zach and the Eldam Shalom Fun depends on one question and one question only. Is it really a schus? If you convince me that it's a schus to be a Jew, then
I'll tell you what.
Zach and the elder Shlomo Fun.
Every Garen, I must admit, hundreds of Garen, I mean, T Garen, perfect Garen, and every one of them has always told me it is a source of time. And then, the way they feel, were, not the way I feel.
You haven't met a lot of.
Yeah, but keep in mind, Brian, that all those hundreds of Garen that you met,
hundreds, I don't know, maybe.
Whatever it is, they all decided to become Garen. So wait a minute, we don't have to ask whether it's a schus.
I know a lot of ger,
because you understand, in that mindset, given the fact that this ger was moved, you can't tell me, Brian, that every guy on the street wants to become Jewish. That's not true.
No, but every person.
No, but I'm asking this, Brian, in this case
we're talking about the parents, Machad, and the children of Machad.
I'll even go further than that. Let's say he has no parents, right? Or let's say the mother refuses to become a kid.
I'm going to take a 2.5-year-old baby.
So that's the question. The questionnaire is, if we look at a guy, and we have no reason to know up front, the guy didn't tell us because the guy doesn't have das, that he wants to become a ger. So you've already judged all the gerim. Those gerim have, you know, kol hakavod. You know, they have gone through a very, a soul searching, you know, wrenching process until they decided they want to become gerim. Fine, that's a schus. But if I don't know up front that it's a schus, as far as I know, this ger, you know, down the line is going to resent the fact that he can't eat pork, and because he didn't come to it on his own. You forced it down his throat, right? That's a big question.
So
that's going to be the sugya. Rabosai, but, you know, again, I want to get back to the Rashi that we started with. So there's so many things in the sugya, like, you know, there's so many variables here. Rashi says that ger kot madilnos al das bezdin, he touches my wine, I can drink the wine. And I was wondering, is that the best Rashi could come up?
Because it sounds like he's not a full ger. It sounds like he's in a...
Again, if Zoch and the other Shlomo in front of applies, he's a full ger.
Because there would be the people that would say, how does a 2-year-old...
No, but according to Rashi,
that it's going to be a surprise party, right? I agree with you, and most gerim that I've come across psychologically, the children, when they're at that age, they go according to what their parents are. But you've got a grown-up child, you've got to ask the child if he wants to make a guide.
Right.
Good.
So we'll see all the Asfaras, Brian, are going to come up in the sugi. I'm just interested in, you know, again, because there's so many things going on here, if you can give me the okay here. What I want to focus on now is Zachin li Adam Shelo Bafanav, which the Gemara assumes is the underlying basis for Rav Huna's psak. Zochin li Adam Shelo Bafanav is a subcategory. It's a spin-off of a much greater concept, and that's called Shlucho Shel Adam Kemosa. Now, many, many secular legal systems recognize the concept of shlichus. Somebody can act as my agent, as my proxy. In many countries, he requires what's called notarization. He has to be notarized by a notary public. You know, they put the red ribbon on, you know, the whole nine yards. Fine. But I believe that all that is taken from our religion. We're the first. And there's an entire sugya mesechta kedushin. How do we know in the Torah shlucho shel adam kemosa? The concept of a shliach is not so simple. It wasn't a given. It had to be established. Zochin li adam shelo b'fanav is an application of shlichus with one major difference. In classical shlichus, the mishalech appoints the shliach. In zochin, the mezakeh, who's the shliach, is self-appointed. Obviously, because shelo b'fanav. The one who's being zochi has no awareness, no knowledge of what's being done on his behalf. Again, the assumption is that if he would have known, he certainly would have agreed. Great, you operated as my shliach. I love you. I kiss you. I hug you. You did me a great favor. But he, at the time of the ma'isa, he was unaware. That's the chiddush of Zochin li Adam Shelo B'fanav. But it's a flip side and an extension of shlichus. What does that mean? When shlichus operates, when it applies, zochin applies, if it's a zchus, obviously. When shlichus doesn't apply, then zochin can't apply. Because zochin is nothing more than a subcategory or an extension of shlichus. So far, so good? Now I have my main point. In the parasha of shlichus, which is Hafrosh's truma, the Torah says, atem gam atem. There's an extra word, gam. And the Gemara says that from that gam we derive shlichus. Meaning you could be mafresh your truma, or your shliach could be mafresh your truma. Says the Gemara, but it says gam atem. The gam has to be similar to the atem. And the Gemara establishes two principles based on that similarity between atem and gam atem. Number one, the mishaleach has to be a Jew. And number two, the shliach has to be a Jew. Which means two things. Number one, I can't be a shliach on behalf of a guy. Number two, a guy cannot be a shliach on my behalf, even if I appoint them as such. Memela, zachin liyodim shalom b'fanov, has the same limitations as shliach, and it doesn't work for an akum, for a non-Jew. Which means, number one, that I can't be mezak on behalf of a non-Jew. And number two, a non-Jew can't be mezak on my behalf. In this case, Bezdin is operating as the extended arm, the agent of the guy. But he's still a guy. And a guy cannot appoint a shlich. Therefore, since Zochin is mitam shlichus, how could Bezdin possibly serve to be Zochin liadam on behalf of a guy? This is the kash of Tosos. If you take a look inside. V'teimo, he says, I don't understand the whole premise of Rav Huna. I wish you'd underline this if you're able to do so. For hazchia havi mitam shlichus, which means it is a subcategory, an extension, application of shlichus, and it is bound by the same regulations as shlichus. The kevan deschusulo, since it's a schus for him, anan sahadi, we can testify. The Ovid le shliach, that if he only knew about it, he would have appointed him as a shliach. Kidemuchach beperakam and develop metzia daf yud beis, kavi chotze mishum yadis rabbi vlogar mishlitz. Okay, we're not going to get into the sugi of chotze. Im kain, oh, here's where you want to underline. This is the punchline. Heich zachin le katan. How could we be schus for a katan? Valo ain't shlichus le katan. The whole concept of shlichus only works for a Jew and not for a non-Jew. Can Amrina be Ezu Neshech? The Odin, furthermore, Dakati Oviko Chavim, who, the Amrina and Hossam, the Katan, the Asilichal Shlichus, Isle Schia Midrabanon, but Oviko Chavim, the Lo Asilichal Shlichus, Achil Schia Midrabanon, Leslie. The Nirulari, the Hochanami, Zachin Lo Midrabanon. Kid Amrina and Hossam, the Katan, Isle Schia Midrabanon. The Afal Gav Dakati of the Kochovimu Ha'asi Lichlal Shlichus. The whole business of Rav Huna is Dirabana. The Torah does not recognize this case. Do you hear what's going on here, Rabos? Now, thank God, there's another Tosus in Masechta Sanhedrin that disagrees with this Tosus. But Tosus in Masechta Ksuvos is of the opinion that the whole Gantz institution of Ger Kodman Bilin Osal Abbas Bezdin is Midrabbana. Frekt Rashi, if that be the case, why not Gemina? Who cares whether he's a Ger or not? You're telling me on a Deraisa level he's not a Ger. The Rabbanon instituted this Gerus. But what are they going to do? Are the Rabbanon, are they authorized to create a Jew when the Torah says he's a guy? You know, the Rabbanon have very fine authorities. You know, Asu Siogla Torah, Asu Mishrestu Mishmarti. They can create Xeros and Siogos and Minhogos, fine. But they can't take a non-Jew and poof, magically say he's a Jew. Says Tosus, they can do so, but only with Rabbanon. Says Rashi, but means on a Daraisa level, he's still a God. He's only a Jew to Rabbanon. If that be the case, what do I need it for? What did you gain here by calling him a Jew with Rabbanon?
I always thought that a person's going to want to become Jewish.
What do you say?
But I mean, intend to become Jewish.
Right, so the chiddush here is that it's a schus for him to be a Jew.
And,
okay, but we'll get, again, we're going to try to iron out all those glitches, but what we're focusing now on is one and only one issue. Does Zach and the other Shlom fun of work here? Does it operate here effectively for Gerus? If I assume it's a schus. And the Gemara seems to assume, yes, that we can operate with Zach and the other Shlom fun of, to the such extent the Gemara says, I don't even understand why Rav Huna had to bother telling me this halacha of Bezdim Ad Bilin Asal Bezdim. It's a schus, Zach and the other Shlom fun of. Tos says, what are you talking about? Zach and the other Shlom fun of is only mitam shlichus, and there's no shlichus to an Aku. Here he's a guy. We can't become a shliach for a guy. There is no shliach to a guy. Says Tosus, radical. The whole business is the Rabbanan. So what I would like to suggest, this is Berzon talking, is that Rashi was bothered by the following question. If we assume, again I'm making a great leap of faith here, that Rashi accepted Tosus. I don't know if that's so. But if we assume that Rashi accepted Tosus, and the whole institution of Gerkot Matbilnos Al-Bezdin is only the Rabbanan, the Rabbanan gave him the status of a Jew. They can only do so, says Rashi, vis-a-vis the Rabbanans. So my nafkamina. We can't let this guy marry into the Jewish fold. Again, when he becomes bar mitzvah, you know, he's mature enough and he's become bar das, let him come in front of Beis Din and say, accept Gerus. But up until that age, he's a guy, as far as the Torah is concerned. See, tell me the Rabbanan made him into a Jew. Rashi scratches his head. He can't figure out my nafkamina. Says Rashi, there's one nafkamina. Which nafkamina? Yeah. Stam Yenum. Stam Yenum is only the Rabbanan. When a guy touches Jewish wine, it becomes asur. You go into a wine store, right? Today. A regular wine. Have you ever walked into a wine store? I do it from time to time just to ask if by chance in a million they have kosher wine. And I've never ever succeeded in finding a wine store, even on Main Street in Queens. A geisha wine store that has. Why? Because they don't get business from Jews. Jews don't go into these. They go into the kosher wine store, right? So they don't have any, you know, monetary gain by selling kosher wine. But I go in there anyway, just for the fun of it. And I say, you know what? Maybe by chance you have kosher wine to sell. All the wine in that store is asur to me to drink. Is that d'oraisa or d'rabbanan?
Why is it asur?
It's asur d'rabbanan. Why? Because it's stam yena. I'm not going to promise you that the, you know, the guy who's selling me the wine, you know, he used that wine as a libation back. You know, he was on a trip to the, you know, to the east, and he was visiting the gurus. Or I don't know what they have over
that's
there.
A problem.
What?
That could be a problem. Some of our wines are really good wines.
But who says that?
Oh, okay. I have no problem selling kosher wine to a non-Jew. If I can make a business out of that, that's a great business for a good Jewish boy. My problem is I want to drink non-kosher wine. Now, what's non-kosher about it? It's made of grapes. There's no lard in it. There's nothing treif in there. So what's my issue here? The issue is that a guy touched the wine, the manufacturer, whatever it might be. So what? Are you telling me that he took the wine and he poured it in front of, you know, Buddha? Well, I don't know if they do that. I don't know. Whatever the answer is, it's all Durabban. That's fascinating. No, it doesn't mean I'm telling you to go in and buy non-kosher wine. Don't misunderstand. But it's not Asur Midrash. It's Asur Midrabban. Now we have a Ger Katan who's my feeling us all das Bezdin. And Tosus says that Matbilan Osal Das Bezdin works Midin Schia, but it's only the Rabbanan because eventually he will be included in Schia, so the Rabbanan already allowed the Schia to operate, but he's only a Ger the Rabbanan. Now this Ger Katan sells me wine. The Torah says he's a guy. Zach and the other Rabbanan can't work. The Rabbanan said he's a Jew. Can I drink his wine? Says Rashi, yes. Enough. That's the nafkamina. What did we accomplish by being Magayer this Katan? We can touch his wine. Aaron, did you want to say something?
Now that
I just need a drink.
Now that he's a Jew, Midirabanan, what? His parents could also marry him off, right? The parents could also marry off the girl. We learned that earlier. So that means it's possible to marry off someone that's a Derabanan Jew, but not a Deraita.
So Tosa's going to have to learn that even though she was born non-Jewish, she'll still get a Ksubas Masayim, but the wedding is going to take place after she reaches her 12th birthday and she accepts Geirus. Now again, does she have to undergo a new tefillah? I don't know. It could be, thank you so much, that the tefillahs are considered a tefillahs Geirus. What's missing here is Das, because Zachar and the other Shalom Fonim cannot supply Das for a guy, because Zachar and the other Shalom Fonim is a tributary of Shlichus. And when this girl reaches the age of 12, she'll have to make a declaration that she wants to remain Jewish. And then she becomes Jewish midoraisa. Somebody could marry her, a Jewish man could marry her. The ksuba that she'll get, despite the fact that she's a gyores, is Masayim Zuz. Why? Because the gyores took place at the age of 2.5.
But she has the cheskas of kashrus because of the gyores before 3.
Cheskas psula, you mean?
Psula, because of the gyores, even though it's not a real
gyores. Right, so I see what you're asking. I mean, if Rashi was looking for an afkamina, he could have given this afkamina, because now that the Rabbanon made this person into a ger, he, or in this case she, retains her cheskas psula. Very good. That's an excellent point. I would get my answer to that is that Rav Hun is talking about a male child. And he's going to prove it from the female case in our Mishnah. But because look at the language of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says ger katan. He doesn't say gioris katana. And Rashi also says hevi also imo. His mother brought him. So in the case, you know, in the case of a boy, you know, might have to mean between basula and baula. The whole distinction is irrelevant. So the only thing Rashi can come up with in the case of a ger katan who's male, then afkamina is if he touches our wine.
So he has to be moiled again when he's 13?
So again, that comes back to the other question. It could be that the mila and tefillah are l'shem geirus. And if the mila and tefillah are l'shem geirus, we're only missing the third element, which is kabbalas ol mitzvahs. And that could come at a later stage when he becomes a bar das.
Wait, so if this derabanan ger sells you wine that he touches, right? Where's... On a Rabbanan level, it's fine. But then when they turn the age where they could accept Das, let's say they reject the Das. Let's say they say they don't...
Ah, does it work retroactively?
Does the wine now become... Yeah.
Ah.
Like, is it...
I would say no. I would say that the Rabbanan invented or created this institution called Geirus de Rabbanan. And that remains, you know, again, it's not relevant anymore once he becomes 13 and he says, I don't want this whole thing, thanks but no thanks. And from then on, he's a full-fledged guy, even in a Rabbanon. But I don't think that has to undermine his status as a Ger de Rabbanon. Nafkamina, says Rashi, for all the wines that he came in contact with up until his birthday.
I think it happens often. I mean, unfortunately, it does happen. A person could have been a great rabbi, married people off, and all of a sudden he decides he's going to become a reform rabbi.
Right, so that doesn't impact my friend. No, but Aaron's point is that here, this whole institution of Geirus is anticipating that when he becomes a Gadol, he'll accept his Judaism. So Aaron's point was, why not say that if he doesn't accept his Judaism, the whole Geirus was bunk? It was all a fiction. It was a fabrication of our imagination. And all the wines that he produced now should be problematic. So what I'm suggesting is that there's a new chalos, a new institution, halachically, called Geirus Derabbanan. It's mind-boggling. You know, I heard of many Derabbanans in my life, but I never heard of Geirus Derabbanan. It's a whole new... field, you know, we can write a book, a treatise called Geirus Derabbanan, you know, we can have an Easter Derabbanan, this Chametz Derabbanan, this Basar B'Cholov Derabbanan, in case of Basar Ov. You can talk about Mitzvahs Derabbanan, like Chanukah and Purim. Now I have a new concept, buddies, and you heard it for the first time here in the Amic Learning Center. Geirus Derabbanan. And that would perhaps justify why Rashi was the best thing that he could come up with. You know, the news on the front page. Again, Rabbi Goldstein is saying Rashi wants to know as a cotton. And I'm saying even more than that. Rashi is telling you, my nafkamina to this Geirus. The only nafkamina to this Geirus is whether his wine is kosher or not. You want to know whether he can marry a Jewish girl? that depends on something totally different. That's going to require a new Geirus, not a fully new Geirus, because I think the Milah and Tefillah still remains relevant and potent, but it's going to require Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs. And now if you take a look at the next line in the Gemara says, Tnina, Zachin Liyadu Shalom Befanov, V'yein Chavin Liyadu Shalom Befanov. So we already have this codified in a Mishnah, in Masech Erevin, and elsewhere. Ma'al Detem, I would have thought, Oved Ko Chavim, Behefkera Nichalei. Again, this is not Brian Yorger, who decided after going through a whole process. Yisrael checked out every religion that there was until he finally decided there's only one truth. We're talking about your average guy over here. We have no reason to believe that he wants to be a Jew. Is Befkera Nichole? What does he need it for? How many mitzvahs does a guy have?
Seven.
It's a heck of a lot easier. Tell him not to eat Avraham Menachai. I won't eat Avraham Menachai. For some of the others, it's a little problematic for the guy, whatever. I don't want to go into details here, but, Bilam is a good case in point. His girlfriend was. So, Bilam had trouble with the Zion Mrs. B'nai Noah. He was that great heathen prophet. But a guy likes Efkerus. What are you telling me? From now on, I can't do Malach on Shabbos, you're telling me? I can't have wine, I can't have non-kosher wine, I can't go to bars, I can't have flings of different sorts, I won't go into detail here. You're hitting me with 613 mitzvahs.
That's a lot.
That's too much. Halavai I could upheat in the seven mitzvahs, Now you want to hit me with 613. And that's kashrus laws and nida laws and yontif laws and
Shabbos.
I mean, this is endless. Who needs it? Befkera nichol. The kaimelon eved vade befkera nichol. Oh, this is interesting. Let's say an eved knani, right? I accept a get shukra on his behalf without telling him. As a result, he becomes a full fledged ger because the Shichur by so the Adon gives a get shichur to either to the Eved himself or to someone who stands as an agent as a proxy on behalf of the Eved, then the Eved now becomes a full fledged Jew. So the law is that you cannot accept a get shichur on behalf of an Eved without his knowledge, without being appointed, and apply the principle of Zochin Liyadu Shalom Befanov. Why? Because an Eved is living a life of hefkeres. In fact, the law is that, if you want to get children through this Eved, you give them a couple of shifras, and hope that one of them will click over there, if you know what I mean. So he's living a life of Efkerus. Kamash Malan, you know why we can't accept a get shifra on behalf of an Eved and make him into a ger? Daddy Billy Gadol, because he's already mature. V'toam tamadisur, he's already getting used to the free life. Aval Katan, this is the Chiddush of Rav Huna. He doesn't have that bribe, he's not bribed in that way. He's never enjoyed the free life. And therefore, Zchusu lo, it's considered a Zchus. So Rabosai, the bottom line here that we take out of this sugya is Rav Huna was Mechadish, that Zachin, the other Shalom Befanov, works in games. Tosa has a technical problem because there's no Zchiyah Mitam Shlichus in the case of a guy, and therefore this Geirus has to be the Rabbanah. If we don't accept Tosa, so we recognize Rav Huna as saying that the Geirus is Doraisa, then Zachin Liyadim Shalom Befanov is the basis for Geirus Doraisa. And Rabbi Goldschart, this is Halach L'maisa. This is not some sort of theoretical discussion here. The Zachin Liyadim Shalom Befanov in the case of Geirus is real. This is not a fiction. Lema misayele. And now Rav Huna has a clear-cut proof from our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, like, Yoris v'ashviya, shif v'shenifli, shtel v'shagam, v'chok, v'shagam, 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 my love, how did they become gerim when they were less than 3 years old in our Mishnah? Is dat belinu al das beznin. There was tvil al das beznin. Lo. Hacha b'mayaskinon. Beger shenis gairu bonov Ubinosav imo. Ah, here we have das. Why the whole family was miskayer? Nichlu b'maydi over avuhan. That's interesting. The Gemara used the word avuhan. Avuhan means the father of this family. He was miskayer, and he took his children along with him. And that could be what Rashi means when he says that Gerich and Matbilan Osalta Espez is ain't lo av. If he doesn't have a father, so we don't assume that necessarily it's Nichole b'maydi over avuhan because the father's not here. But the answer is that we've defined this as zchus, and that's the chiddush of Rav Huna, and zochel liolam shlo b'fana. Rashi says that we still need the father, but we don't have the father, so Bezdin is going to step into the shoes of the father. Amar Rav Yosef, higdilu. Okay, fine. So it was a great thing for the Katan to become a Jew, but now the Katan is mature enough to make this decision on his own. So you adopt a child, even at birth, you bring him to Beis Din, they do the tefillah, and he's zochel liolam shlo b'fana. Matbil said that. Now the child is 12 if it's a female, or 13 if it's a male. And guess what? I don't know. Maybe they made it this. Says Rav Yosef, higdilu yicholim limchos. They can throw it completely out. And here's where Aaron gets up and says, maybe Lumafreya, maybe retroactively, it was never worth a dime. And we should okay the Geris Lumafreya. So Berzon says, no, that far we're not going to go. But definitely Mikan Lahava, from the moment of Mecha. So Moshe Feinstein has a very fascinating tshuva, and he says, you know, we make a bar mitzvah for this boy. Why do you make a bar mitzvah for this boy? Maybe he doesn't want to be Jewish. 13 years ago at his birth, we were Megayrim. Fine, but Higdilu Yecholim Limchos.
Bar mitzvah is the proof that he's accepted.
Oh, says Rav Moshe, if at the moment he becomes bar mitzvah, he does a mitzvah, he continues to act like a Jew, then that proves that he doesn't want to make a mechah.
Yeah,
meaning, Rav Moshe wants to say the following. The Gemara never says that we require that this katan, when he becomes a gadol, make a formal, explicit declaration in the presence of Beis Din and the judges that I want to be a Jew. We can assume he wants to be a Jew. What Rav Yosef says is, higdilu yicholim limchos. But if he doesn't make a mechah, he doesn't try chai v'kaim, I don't want to be a Jew. But Rav Moshe says maybe he doesn't want to be a Jew. So the way we're going to determine, we're not going to require that he come in front of Beis Din and make the formal declaration, but we're going to watch him. We're going to check him out. We're going to see if he's acting like a Jew, if he's fulfilling his religious duties as a Jew. Then we assume he's okay, he wants to be a Jew. But imagine the case, you know, we talk about off the derech, right? Rachmana Litzlan, you know, children that go off to dinner. I think Brian, we had a discussion about this on Shabbos. Now, it seems to me, again, don't quote me on this, that amongst these Ger Kot and Matbil Nosal Bes, the rate of going off to dinner, I think, is pretty high. I don't know if anyone agrees to that. I don't have any scientific proof for that. But it's not so easy to take a child out of his Goyish family and raise him as a Jew. Again, sometimes the child doesn't even know. But that's rare today. I think most children know. Some of them even know who their parents are, and some of them are even in contact with their parents. There are every variation you could imagine, anything in the books. There are even Goyish parents who couldn't raise the child. They gave the child up for adoption. The child was adopted by an Orthodox family, they were Megayrim al Das Beis Din, and the parents, the biological non-Jewish parents, will send birthday gifts to the child, or will send pictures to the child when one of the child's biological siblings has a birthday. And I know this firsthand, because we have in my family, my wife's family, Ger Kot Matbilanos al Das Beis Din. So imagine you're raising this child, and the child, you know, in some part of his brain, you know, the brain we know is a very complicated machine, very complicated. It's a super cute computer. I just spoke to Dr. Harris tonight. He's a psychiatrist. He told me, I wasn't horizontal, I was vertical. But anyway, so he told me tonight that the brain is enormously complicated. You know, we don't know memory and why we remember certain things, we remember other things, and the relationship between emotions and thought processes. It's very complicated. We don't know beans about the brain. But what was I going to say? I forgot. Yeah, so this child has in the back of his brain, in some, you know, maybe some amorphous part of his brain, he knows that he's born Goyish. He's got non-Jewish biological parents. Anyway, look, you raised the child, you did the best you could. I'm not faulting anyone, I'm not judging anyone. But the kid is not interested in being religious. So my suffix is he Jewish at all? You know, we have a halacha called a mumar, a Yisrael mumar. If a guy, for example, becomes Jewish, kedasu kedin, a mature guy, forget about gerkot, and then he goes off to derech, that doesn't undermine his gerus. He's a Yisrael mumar. The Gemara says about Esav that Esav was technically Jewish, and he was a Yisrael mumar. Again, I don't want to get into that, but. Bamedvar Mahurin, when is a ger considered a mumar? That's if his gerus is clinched. But if at the time of his bar mitzvah, or bat mitzvah in the case of a girl, he or she has no interest in becoming Jewish, in staying Jewish, then no deal. The deal is off. We're not talking about a Yisrael mumar. We're talking about a goy.
We don't need to reveal to them.
Sometimes we do reveal, sometimes they don't. I'm curious to know whether the halacha advocates that we notify.
One of the problems with them today is it's very vague what that means. In other words, I was involved in a case like this. In other words, a boy that has the bar mitzvah, he studied for his bar mitzvah, and he read the parsha, but he's not so frum. So what do you do in that case? In other words, do you say that he's rejecting his Judaism? Or is he when a typical he's not modern true. Orthodox kid?
If he's Machal Shabbos for Farhesya, Lufiani is Daiti, the Farhesya, I'm saying, you know, the real McCoy, you know, he's smoking publicly on Shabbos.
Okay, so now
I would say he's not Jewish at all, in my opinion.
That's already extreme, but let's say it's somewhere in the middle, and let's say 50% of modern Orthodox kids observe Shabbos the way this kid is observing Shabbos. Do you say that that's not a Jew?
No, I would say if he's observing Shabbos in a 50% way, then he wants to be a Jew. Yeah, he's not going as far as to saying, I chucked the whole thing.
Right.
In that sense, I would be very liberal. But there are cases where you see a child who's just so angry about Yiddishkeit.
But then the question is, why
not let him off the hook? That's what I would say.
No, but even
Yiddish Sheva Mitzvah Spreyach. Halafai should observe the Sheva Mitzvah.
It's not so simple because...
It's not simple because of the parents.
It's not because of the parents, but it's not so simple because of... And you mentioned just a minute ago that so many kids today are... You know, there's a bit of rebelliousness at that time, and especially, let's say, more so in the modern Orthodox world. Saying that that person is... What? All worlds, right? Let's not be tough in modern worlds. But are we saying this child is really rejecting his Judaism? In other words, are we ready to say that? I'm just saying it's a difficult issue.
Well, I'm asking you this, Adam. Let's say this child was here in front of us, and I gave him two choices.
You want in or out?
One choice is he's going to burn in purgatory,
right,
for Chil Shabbos. The other is just try to observe the seven mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. You want to become Jewish at some later stage, we'll accept you. You know what I'm saying? But why box yourself into a situation where every single malach on Shabbos, I'm just giving you that example.
Are we ready to ask a 13-year-old boy?
No, I'm not ready to ask, but I'm asking you, what do you feel is a schus for him? This guy is rebellious. You're pushing on him 613 mitzvahs.
Huge fetish.
I would say Zachariah over here should lead me to the opposite conclusion. Later on, down the line, you want to become a Jew, we'll talk about it. But right now, why do I want to foist Judaism on this kid when he's rebellious? When he's literally resenting Yiddishkeit?
But you see,
and he's going to burn he's going to burn, you know, pardon the expression, but he's going to burn in you know where as a mumar. That's a terrible thing. You know, I'd rather be a guy in that case. So again, I'm not going to ask the child, but I'm going to ask you as a Rav, which direction do you want the halacha to turn here? Do you want to impose on Zach and the Elf fun of? Or do you want to say, you know, the best thing for this guy is that he remain a guy? Go ahead.
I mean, you know, we just remember, this is, they have these problems. A person adopts a child, all right? I mean, you read about it.
At least we'll hear Barclay on time.
But when somebody adopts a child, you want your child to grow up, or when you have a child, you become adult children, right? You want your children to carry on in the derech, all right? And it doesn't always work. They do. You have rebelliousness. You have this kind of thing. But that's the one. So,
but the kid's born Jewish?
He's born Jewish.
So I have no choice. You know, my only choice is to try to make him love Judaism. And I don't know how to do that. I wish I knew.
So you have,
you know what I'm saying? There are no secret
case,
Porsche.
You adopt a child, all right?
A non-Jewish child. Then, you know, at some point you see you weren't successful. Again, I'm not judging you. You know, there were too many influences on the child, whether it's other Jewish kids, whether I want to say that there's an element here of...
Yichus.
You know, of Yichus, that he still is, you know, somewhat connected to his non-Jewish parents. I'll even go a step further. It's very hard to raise a non-Jewish child. It's hard for to raise a Jewish child, let alone a non-Jewish child, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, at some point, doesn't the halacha want to take the opposite approach and say, wouldn't it be the best thing in the world for this kid at this point not to be Jewish? And Rav Yosef says, Igdili chalom limcha. So Rav Yosef's not pleased.
Just to raise another sort of practice.
Yeah, just keep the door open, because otherwise there's a fellow, I don't want to mention his name, comes banging on the door.
That's an Eretz Yisrael tip.
And I get very sensitive about that, because I mean, Max will testify that I was a Rosh Yeshiva in Mevaseret for, okay, maybe you don't know this, but for 18 years.
I was only there once.
You were only one. But I probably won't shock you if I told you that for 18 years no one ever banged on the door in my classroom.
Rav Berzon, today in Eretz Yisrael that is a major issue.
I'm spoiled.
With Ger Katan, that the million, you know, Russian Jews that are here, and in terms of converting children, and there's an Orthodox institution here called Itim that's doing hundreds of Gerim on Ger Katan.
Okay, so you know what? I think, Aaron, after we finish the sugya, we'll come back to that.
I just wanted to focus on this one scenario,
which I think is complex as it is. Higdilu Yecholim Limpus.
Right.
And I have a feeling that in some part of Rav Yosef's presentation, he was almost hoping that you know. Again, I don't know if Rav Yosef. There he is. Okay, on both sides, we'll stop here. There's a lot to talk about.